The John Gambling Show with special co-host Mayor Michael Bloomberg.
We need to end the gridlock and to stop passing the buck to future generations.
Mayor Michael Bloomberg on The John Gambling Show.
We, the individual voters, have to do something different. We have to hold those we elected accountable.
Now, with New York's only local news talk morning radio program, here are John Gambling and Mayor Michael Bloomberg.
All right, thank you very much, Bill Rock. It is a Friday. That means it is indeed time for Mayor Michael Bloomberg. Good morning, sir. Welcome.
Chilly, John.
To say the least.
It was cold when I walked out the door this morning. Wind was blowing, and I've always thought the coldest day of the year, although it wasn't last year, is the night before Thanksgiving when they blow up the balloons, which is one of the most fun things in the city. I can't urge everybody enough. Go to the parade on Thursday, but it's also fun to watch them blow up in all the streets around the Museum of Natural History. But it's usually cold. And last year, it was shocking. It was not freezing.
It lost some of its ambiance without the cold weather.
Well, I was happy about it. But I think we can officially say that fall is over and winter is about to arrive.
And you got the big Christmas tree, not lit officially. Not lit. That'll come a little while
I
down
will
the road,
be
up.
There. Jerry Spire, Spire Tishman owns, Tishman Spire owns Rockefeller Center, and they always put on a big do. Al Roker is always there. And
gets bigger and bigger every year.
Every year.
When are they going to get you out there on the ice rink?
They've asked me. I've said no.
All right.
You've got to know your core competencies, as they say.
Mr. Mayor, you have brought a guest with
I have.
You today.
You probably asked about Tino Hernandez, and you want to know why Tino Hernandez is here.
I figure you will tell us.
You might even ask, who is Tino Hernandez? And I will tell you. Tino Hernandez is the guy that if I drive by a New York City Housing Authority complex and see one piece of paper in the lawn.
He's the guy who gets the call?
At 3 in the morning.
Nice guy.
He is the head of the New York City Housing Authority. He has had a distinguished career in government. He's done a great job of serving as my chairperson, which I appoint to the City Housing Authority for the past 7 years. But now he is leaving us. You could ask why.
Well, I can ask Tino why.
You can ask him. I can tell you, though, because I've told him what to say. No, he's gone back to where he came from. Who says you can't go home again? Tell him what you're going to do,
Tino. Good morning. Welcome aboard.
Good morning, John. How are you? Mr. Mayor, how are you?
Where are you off to?
After about 15 years of city service, I'm returning to the private sector. Prior to joining city government, I was vice president of a very large drug treatment agency, Samaritan Village. And I'm actually returning there to become president and CEO of the organization upon the retirement of really my former boss, best friend, mentor, Richard Pruss, who has retired after 43 years of serving as president.
It's a good story.
Yeah, it is a good story. Tino actually has done a great job. You know, most cities are walking away from their public housing, and you see these pictures in the news of them blowing them up and that sort of thing. And we've gone in the other direction. We've invested a couple $1 billion in NYCHA housing, replacing elevators and appliances and locks and caulking windows and that sort of stuff. And we've made it an awful lot better for the people that live there. We've brought crime down dramatically. We've also raised rents for those in NYCHA housing who can afford it, who are making more money. That's only fair to everybody because somebody's got to pay. Tino really has made a big difference. We have included NYCHA in our environmental stuff in terms of upgrading boilers and planting trees and all of those kinds of things. Maintenance is different. Hey, now he's got a 311 service you can call.
I take care of one house, and it's a lot of work. I can't even imagine.
How many people live in NYCHA housing?
The Housing Authority has close to about 180,000 apartments in conventional public housing, about 420,000 people. We now have hit probably somewhere in the area of about 90,000 Section 8 vouchers. We've run the largest Section 8 program in the
Section
country.
It's a federal program where you can get help for your rent if you don't make enough to pay the bills.
Yeah, which probably would bring the total of people that receive housing from the Housing Authority to somewhere in the area about 625,000.
No, I think
Yorkers.
I missed it. Is that more or less than it was in the past. Is that more people or about the same, the population?
We're actually pretty much stable. Mm-hmm. The biggest issue that we've had is that over the last 7 years, we have seen a tremendous federal disinvestment in public housing. And really under the mayor's leadership, who has made it very clear that New York City will always have a public housing within New York City, we've been able to fight against that tide. Federally, I think we've lost about 200,000 units of public housing across the country. And as the mayor has indicated, many jurisdictions have demolished or eliminated public housing. And that's something that under the mayor's leadership we have not done here. We've been able to make investments to preserve public housing here. As a matter of fact, we've also expanded our Section 8 program by about 22,000 vouchers. And this year will probably hit an unprecedented number. We opened up the waiting list for the first time in decades, and we'll add probably about another 12,000 units, and we'll reach 22,000 units of public housing probably by next year.
He's actually done a very good job. Mm. You know, this is not an easy job. Being a landlord is not good. Tina, you grew up in public housing?
I lived in public housing
so
in the Lower East
Side.
So
he's gone from being a tenant in public housing to being are you the largest landlord in the country?
I would say the largest landlord in the country. If we were a city, we would probably be ranked as the 17th largest city in the country.
Think about that. And he came to see me last January and said he wanted to go back to Samaritan Village, where he had been vice president many years ago. And I said, you can go back, but you got to give us some time because there's so many things going on. And I wanted to make sure we found somebody to fill in the meantime. And NYCHA's general counsel, Ricardo Morales, is going to be the acting chairperson. And we're doing a national search headed by Nat Leventhal, the guy that put together all the administration, and we'll find somebody great, and hopefully we find somebody better that take what Tino did and build on it.
Well, Tino, congratulations. Good luck in the new old
right.
position.
Right.
And not leaving service in New York City, which right. I think is about as valuable as it gets.
And the last thing that I would add is that really under the mayor's leadership, we're also expanding housing throughout New York City, working with our agency, the Housing Preservation and Development. We have about 6,000 units of affordable housing in the pipeline, which also will bring revenue to the Housing Authority. So, John, it's a pleasure meeting you.
Good luck to you in the future.
Thank you,
Tino,
Mr.
all
Mayor.
The best on behalf of the city. Thank you for all your service, but you're still on a whole bunch of boards for us, and you're going to continue. We're not letting you go away without that.
Right, and Mayor, it's been an honor serving you, and thank you. Thank you for the opportunity to serve New Yorkers.
All right, gentlemen, hang on. Let me take my first break. We will be coming right after 8 o'clock. The Mayor is with John here at the News Talk Radio 710 WOR.
It's sort of like The Mayor is with John. You're talking about yourself in a third person.
I once did
that, and they criticized me, so I've never done it again.
I get criticized for all sorts of things.
I saw your ads on the bus, incidentally.
Beautiful, isn't it?
Yeah, the bus almost ran us down. If I had gotten hit, you would have hit me. It was right about where I was going to get hit.
That's funny. All right, much of the conversation this week and your time and focus has been on the $400 rebate checks. Yay or nay? I talked with Christine Quinn earlier in the week. She, of course, wants them to go out.
Well, I want them to go. Keep in mind, number one, this was the administration's idea. I thought from day one that when real estate prices go up, it affects different people differently. When real estate prices go up, if you own a building that you rent out or have made an investment in, you get the value of that. You don't have to sell it. Some people say, oh, I never sell, but that's up to you. You can sell it if you want and get value. If you own a home and the price goes up, generally speaking, you don't get any value because if you sold your house, you'd have to buy another one, which has also gone up. And your property taxes, which pretty much track the assessments, go up. So when prices go up, the single and two-family homeowner doesn't benefit. And so the idea was, because the law says we have to raise all classes at the same time, the same amount, this was with state permission, moving the burden from the one- or two-family homeowner to the person was in the business. I would love to continue it. Like everything else, we don't have enough revenue to do the things we want, so we have to come up with some combination of finding ways to do more with less. And incidentally, we've gotten the low-hanging fruit, the waste and the easy things to cut. That's long gone. Five programs to eliminate the gap ago, and every time we keep cutting the easy stuff, well, you're getting to the point where there's no easy stuff. And the other side of that coin is the revenue side, and it's a balance. Nobody wants to pay more taxes, me included. Everybody wants to have their taxes cut back, like by a rebate. Find a ways to avoid paying the taxes. At the same time, everybody wants services. I sat next to a congressperson the other day, and this person said to me, you know, well, you can't lay off anybody. And I said, you know, 80-90% of the city's budget is salaries. So if we don't lay off anybody, then we've got to raise taxes. And said, oh, no, you can't raise taxes. I said, look, which would you rather do if you're there? Person said, I don't want that job.
My pay grade is that high.
Right. So, you know, we will work with Christine Quinn and the city council. We'll find some balance. It's not going to be easy. It's not going to be pretty. Everybody is going to have to do it. But I am convinced that we have a ways to reduce the expenses first. That's the first place you go without killing any major programs. We can cut out things where there's another service that will do the same thing. For example, ACS Children's Services has one program which the school system provides. As a matter of fact, we found out we've been paying two services, the same place, the same time for the same kid. Okay, so, you know.
I'm glad you found it.
Or the MTA, they've tried to cut out. They have one subway route they want to cut. And the MTA, I've always believed, number one, they do a decent job. Number two, you could run it a lot better. I think both those things are true. And we will help them if we can to get improved service and reduce costs, whether those are possible, that's a separate issue. But they, for example, want to cut a subway line that runs in the same tracks as another one. Okay, if you got to cut someplace, that's probably a lot better than to cut a subway line where there's no substitute. Or they want to cut a bus that goes across, I think it's 8th Street. There's a subway at 14th Street that goes across town. Do you have to walk six blocks? Yes. But if they're going to have to cut something, better that than cut something where there's not duplicative things. So we're going through the city budget, trying to find things where you're not going to really hurt, inconvenience. The economy is telling you, if all we had was inconvenience, we should all have a smile on our face. My worry is that the economy is worse than that, and we're going to have pain. So far, we've not. The 2.5% I've asked every agency to cut in the second 6 months of this fiscal year, starting in January, the 5% I asked them to cut for the next fiscal year, those probably aren't going to be enough. But for the moment, we found ways in every agency to do more with less. For example, police. We're going to have 1,000 fewer cops because we're not going to do one class. Ray Kelly, who's the best commissioner we've ever had, will be able to continue to keep crime coming down with fewer cops. He can't do everything. If you have those 1,000 cops, if they were there, don't just sit around. They work. But there's some things that we don't have to do. Keep in mind, when I first came into office, we cut the size of the police department. People forget this. We cut the size of the police department by 3,000 cops.
Yeah, it was almost 40,000, wasn't it?
Kelly brought crime down every single year since. So, you know, it's good management and hard work. Are the people who are working in the city government going to have to work harder? Yes. So are you. So am I. We are in a very different world. It is very scary. The stock market in the last 2 days has panicked a lot of people. There are a lot of restaurants that aren't doing well, stores where nobody's showing up in the stores. And that's going to be reflected in our tax revenues. And I hope we budgeted for a big enough downturn. My fear is that maybe we were not as pessimistic as we should have been, but it's still too early to tell.
Tell me about the legalities of this, because all week long we've read about, the $400 rebate. Does it have to go out?
There's a judge that's going to decide that, but in any case, it doesn't have to go out right now. It certainly doesn't. Even if the city is obligated to do it, we don't have to do it until for the next handful of months, till probably June. But a court's going to decide that. I think the judge is going to hear the case in middle of December. But regardless, John, if we do this, something else is going to.
My question to you is, what's the gross number here? Well, how much money
it's
are we talking about?
Quarter of a billion dollars.
$250 million.
Yeah, rough numbers. Now, you know, if we do this, then we're going to have to cut $250 billion out of expenses or raise taxes or fees in some other area by $250 billion. And that's what everybody forgets here. People scream, I don't want this program cut. Okay, just tell me which program you do want to cut. Oh, everybody else's, not mine, is the answer.
Are you allowed to maybe cut it in half and send out 200 and find?
I would guess whatever
else?
The judge is probably not going to rule that way. He'll rule yes or no.
And I guess it doesn't really matter. I mean, the money comes from one place or another.
Well, that's the point. point here that it's a question of who gets it, and some of these things are politically popular, and you say, oh, you can't cut it because these are my constituents or these people vote this way. What I'm trying to do is to be as fair to everybody and to make sure that nobody, particularly our kids and our seniors, those are the two most vulnerable groups, don't get hurt. And if we can find ways to do more with less, now's the time we're going to have to do that. I love these people that say, well, in schools, cut out measuring whether we're doing a good job or not. This is the time you should be doubling up on the amount of money you spend to make sure that the monies you spend are providing a real service, not cutting them out. That's about as dumb a policy as you could have.
One of the things I read about that you're looking at is a reduction, daycare reduction, and I believe it was a week or so, maybe 10 days ago, that you talked about cutting back a program of child dental care.
Child dental care is another good example. Medicaid pays for child dental care.
Okay.
For kids that
would
otherwise.
So the city program is irrelevant, or not irrelevant?
It's not irrelevant, and it may be you have to go a little bit to a different place to get it, but we believe that every child will still be able to get it, except in case of Medicaid, we pay 25 cents, the state pays 25 cents, and the federal government pays 50 cents. That's a good deal if we could get them to pay for that service, and there's other examples like that. We've moved other programs out of some of these agencies into others where the federal government or the state government will pay. We'd be derelict in our duty if we didn't do that. But kids are still going to be able to get dental care, and I'm sure there are some dentists that say, oh, I'm going to lose my job, so I'll go out and scream about the kids. That's just not true.
As you pointed out, nobody wants to talk about government employees, but is there the possibility that government employees are going to be impacted by this?
I think, well, in the first place, we have 300,000 employees in the city, and I keep saying this, it happens to be true, that this is the best group I've ever worked with. People in the private sector say, oh, government employees are this, that, and the other thing. I can tell you most of the 300,000, I'm sure they're bad apples, but most work very hard and really are dedicated and are flexible and creative, and that's why the city works. It's not the mayor, it's the 300,000 people that deliver services. But are they going to get affected? Sure, they're going to get affected because it's there. They have mortgages that they can't roll over. They have they're worried about their retirement. Some of them have private savings that they've done outside of their public pension funds. Those get hurt. There's going to be a lot of things. Will we be able to continue with as many employees as we have? I think clearly not. The question is, will attrition take care of it, or will there be layoffs? And even when there's attrition, you don't always lose the people that you need. For example, if one person in this whole city, I'll give you, shoes horses, we have blacksmiths that work for the city. You say, why? Well, a mounted police. You need to put shoes on horses. Let's assume you have one blacksmith. If that guy retires or whatever, you have to replace him. So when you say, well, we're not going to hire anybody, that's not ridiculous. You can't say, well, there's an opening there, I'll move somebody from elsewhere in the city over. Sometimes they don't have the skills. Sometimes they do. My job is to make sure that our city workforce is motivated and knows that we're trying to protect them. I think they are as smart as anybody else, and they understand the real reality. They remember the 70s. These people, most of them live in the city. They send the kids to public schools. They walk on the streets. They don't want to go back to the 70s. They do want to keep their jobs, and I'm going to try to do everything I can to make sure that they have their jobs. But can I look anybody in the eye and promise? No, of course not, any more than you do in the private sector.
All right, the tough issues. We're talking about them this morning with Mayor Michael Bloomberg. My name is John Gambling. Good morning, 8:32. Don't forget, if you'd like to ask the mayor, we have one line open, 800-321-0710. Get in the queue, 800-321-0710. All right, we're back 20 minutes before 9 o'clock, Friday, John Gambling Show. Mayor Michael Bloomberg, I don't know which way to go first. Let's go to Wall Street, your take. Besides the fact that it was down.
Last couple of days were, I think, unexpected. The general consensus, I have no idea whether it's right or not, but general consensus is that when the government said, look, we're not going to use the balance of the 350, we're going to save that, let the next administration use that, The 350 out of the 700, half of it, the street said, oh, well, they're not going to help the banks. And so they started, you know, Citibank was down 60% or something like that in the last couple of days. Goldman Sachs way down, Morgan Stanley, all the banks, J.P. Morgan. And, you know, these banks aren't going to go out of business, but it took the rest of the market down. The other thing is that people are starting to look at the unemployment numbers, which are skyrocketing. And, you know, I just can tell you, in New York City, you walk down the street, you do see more store for rent signs. You see fewer people walking the streets. People are worried about what the Christmas season will be. The retailers are marking things down much earlier than they did before. Some people wait until right at the very end for bargains. This time the bargains are there at the
Internet, they say, dropping the
Internet
prices.
Sales, sure, way down. And, you know, that spooks people, but there are an awful lot of these companies. I looked the other day, Macy's, one of the great companies in the country, Macy's and Bloomingdale brands, and the stock's down 60-70% something. And it's a great company run by a guy who happens to be a friend of mine. Exceptionally well run. You know, that brand isn't, the brands and the loyalty of its employees and customers aren't going to go away, and there will be a time when people come back and shop. And yet the stocks are not reflecting that.
You were down in Washington on Monday, were you not?
Down in Washington on Monday, and talking about infrastructure with Ed Rendell. With the John Podesta, who's running the transition team for Barack Obama, the president-elect. And
what they want to know from you?
Well, I hope they wanted to know what we were saying. But what we were trying to say is, look, if you're going to have a stimulus package, doing what we did the last time, if you remember, almost a year ago now, this country spent $150 billion. Nobody focused on how much money that stimulus package cost.
The $600 checks.
Which was spent, I joke about it, on flat-screen TVs sold through Circuit City, made in China. Well, the Chinese market's down, and Circuit City's gone out of business, or in through bankruptcy anyways. And that didn't do anything. And then everybody says, we'll do infrastructure. Infrastructure is exactly what we need, but some things take a very long time. It doesn't get the stimulus going right away. And so we showed, for example, we have a whole list of city infrastructure projects which are already designed, already approved, already gone through court challenges, the usual stuff. And we could, if we had more money, get more people working and build for the future.
I'm assuming other cities have similar...
Well, I don't know if they've been doing the work. We've been doing the work for a long time. Right. I hope they have because, you know, but in all fairness, New York City, we have taxed ourselves and invested the money. So the water tunnel is almost done. The number 7 extension down 12th Avenue subway line, we're paying for it. The city's on the hook for that. We borrowed the money and we're building that. And we're doing those things. And I think if we had more money, we also talked to them about ways to make the municipal bond market function better, because municipalities, a lot of them do have programs, the things that they could do, whether it's improvements or brand new projects. But the municipal market, at the moment, they can't borrow the money to do it. If the federal government would do things, provide some insurance or change some tax laws so that more people would participate in the municipal market, that would let municipalities go out right away, borrow money, and put people to work. And so we tried to focus on with things that will stimulate, but also so not just waste money. The other thing I kept talking about was the automobile industry and should you do something there.
And what's your position on that?
Well, there's two things that the government's trying to do, and they don't exactly mesh. One thing is to stimulate the economy. In that case, you want to make sure that nobody loses their jobs and everybody is fully employed. The other thing is to make the industry viable so that it can go for a long time. And right now, this is an industry that has the capacity to produce 17 million cars, but only 10 million are being sold, and next year maybe even less than that. And so if you want to make the industry viable, you want to have fewer dealers, fewer plants, fewer employees, and that goes in the other direction of trying to stimulate the economy. It's also not clear to me if you didn't go through a prepackaged bankruptcy what you do, because currently the automobile workers, when they get laid off, still get 95% of their salary.
So it doesn't make sense.
It doesn't. Well, that was between the company and the unions.
They
negotiated it, and the stockholders let them do it, and that's the stockholders' money. I don't have any sympathy for them. I do feel sympathy for the people, but they made that deal. Having said that, it is not viable for the world we live in today. And so I think the federal government's got to decide which they want to do. Save the industry or stimulate the economy. And you can't do both. And in fact, you go in very different directions. But giving them money without a concrete plan that will really accomplish whichever of those two things you want, it would be an outrage, and they should not do it without a plan. Can these people come up with a plan? You know, it was stupid for them to, the three guys flying in on corporate jets, but that's not the issue here. That's what everybody's talking about. Let's get serious. Which one? We're talking about the employees' jobs.
Plan.
We're talking about the future of this country. I know that it's cute to criticize them for that, and they shouldn't have done it. It's really dumb politics or PR, but let's get down to what's really important here. What are you going to do to make this industry produce the kind of cars that people want to buy at prices that people that are competitive?
Speaking of transportation, MTA, Elliot Sanders yesterday with what he called the doomsday plan. Your reaction?
Well, he's got to find ways to do more with less. The state doesn't have any money to put into the MTA. They've got $12, $15 billion deficit, according to the governor.
So you think that there's no hope of the state coming through with anything significant?
Well, I mean, look, in the end, all the money comes out of the taxpayers' pockets, whether you get the riders or taxpayers. You got to make sure that people that get service, and the MTA incidentally goes up into Connecticut. The MTA goes way out on Long Island and up through Westchester and Rockland. So it's not just New York City residents who get the benefit of the MTA, and nor should just city residents pay. You have to do two things. One, we have to operate the railroad, if you will. And this you always joke about running a railroad. Well, these guys actually do run a railroad. Carries 2 or 3 million people a day. And you've got to find a ways to pay the bills, pay the employees so that they're focusing on their jobs, not whether they're going to be able to put food on the table. And then ask them to be very flexible and work. And in all fairness to Roger Toussaint and the TWU, who was the ones, remember, that struck, and sure, we've had our big battles with him, in all fairness, his people probably aren't all that well paid. And they do work pretty hard, and they do generally do a good job. Not everybody, but most. But Sanders has got to do that. At the same time, we're going to have this battle every time. It was a year and a half ago, Elliot Spitzer called me and said, we've got to raise the fares. I need you, the city's help, to get it done. And I said, okay, Elliot, I want to make sure, however, that we make the investments so this will be the last time. Absolutely, we're going to do that. And then, of course, nothing was ever done. And we had this congestion pricing idea where federal government would have given us $384 million for a variety of reasons, not worth revisiting history. We all walked away from that. Now we don't have any money for the capital budget. And unless you make the big capital investments, you will every year have the same thing. Costs going up and the public not having as good service as they could and no money.
Should the fare, if it's going to go up, and it's rumored 50 cents, I know you don't know the answer to this, but should it go up a dollar so that we don't jump
into
the same
path? It's easy to answer the question. The average, I forget the numbers, but the average person pays $1.30-ish. And that's less than they paid a while ago. We have all of these fares. If you buy a monthly card and use it a lot, your fare can be 50 cents on average.
Should it all be $2 and eliminate?
You wouldn't have to. If you made everybody a dollar and a half, I think the numbers, I'd have to go back and look, but I think at a dollar and a half, they'd be a wash in money. The trouble is, some people say, well, that's not fair. We want to encourage people to take the subways and the buses, which we do, rather than leave their cars at home. So you can't, if you were designing the perfect transit system, you'd charge nothing for mass transit and have a very high toll on cars. That's not realistic. We're not going to, we should have been there, but we're not, and we're never going there. So what you have to do here is, even if you're going to raise fares somewhat, you still should be charging, making cars more expensive than mass transit to get people onto mass transit. Because today we don't have this congestion pricing issue. It's not coming up. But congestion does raise costs dramatically in the city, pollutes our air, and long term, we can't walk away from that. But if you charged everybody a buck and a half, I think the number numbers are that they'd have an enormous amount of money. It's just that there's so many different weeklies, monthlies. I have a seniors card. Somebody criticized me the other day for using my seniors card. I'm very proud of it. Thank you. That's $1 a ride. If I bought an unlimited, I use it enough. It'd probably be less. So I'm paying more than I have to, but I like the idea of having a seniors card. Plays well when I show it to you. You're impressed.
Yeah, absolutely so. I didn't realize you were that old. It's 10 now before 9 o'clock.
And I want to get older.
All right. You're absolutely right in that score. We're going to go to the phones. You get to after here. Let's see if we can get as many in as we possibly can. Mr. Mayor, right to the telephone. We go to line number 2, and that gives us Jay on the line. Jay, go. Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Mayor.
Good morning.
Could you consider for a short period of time restricting the amount of parades that you have in your city?
Jay, there's a couple problems. Number one, from a First Amendment right point of view, I'm sure the courts would not let you. What we have been able to do is argue that we, in the public interest, it's important to move them to where the traffic isn't so bad, or we spread the pain, or a variety of things like that. So we have legally the ability to say no more new parades, for example, on Fifth Avenue, but you have to give them some roughly equal location to parade. So we don't have the legal right to do it. That's one thing. Number two, the parades really are, you know, ethnic pride, and they generate a lot of economic activity, bring people. The Macy's Parade is an example. That does bring a lot of people to the city. But even the other parades, that, you know, there is economic activity. It's part of the culture. What it does do is it screws up traffic, and it does cost more police over time. And, Jay, you're 100% right. It'd be great if we didn't have those two things. But from the street fairs are another one. I'm trying to see if we can't find a better ways. Street fairs on the side streets is one possibility. Fewer street fairs, making sure that they really do generate some revenue and give it to the community, which was the ostensible purpose. They were supposed to do with sell art and that sort of thing, and all they do is sell
underwear.
I don't know about the underwear, but the big greasy sausages, which I love, incidentally. I'm the first one to line up and buy one. But that's, you know, that's what street fairs do these days, and nothing wrong with that. But they do cost over time, and they do screw up traffic.
All right, Jay, thanks a bunch. Let's go to John here. John, out in Brooklyn. Good morning. You've got the mayor's ear. Go.
Good morning, Mr. Mayor.
Good morning.
Mr. Mayor, I just want to bring up, it was brought to you up a couple of months ago about the out-of-state cars in New York, and since that was brought up to you, I see more and more, and I know for a fact they're not commuting. I could see it. I work in a place where I take in about 150 cars a day, and they're from Pennsylvania, Virginia, and North Carolina. It seems to be increasing.
Well, if what you're saying is people are registering their cars out of state to avoid taxes or insurance here, we'd like to be able to stop that, obviously. It is a problem, and there's no easy answer on how you go and do it. Also, if these people, for example, don't pay a toll, they zip through one of these toll booths where there's no gate, but it just registers, it's hard to go, or you give them, or they get a ticket on the street for blocking the box or illegal parking. How do you collect when they're outside of your jurisdiction? The worst case is the biggest abuses. We try to keep track of it, and if the police happen to give you a ticket for something else, they check to see if you've got a lot of outstanding things, and then you got big problems. But it is a big problem, John. It just is no easy solution. What we have fixed, and nobody's complained about this in a long time, is the diplomatic community abusing the parking, you know, parking at fire hydrants, parking on the corner, that sort of thing. You almost never hear about that anymore, whether it's the consular corps or the ambassadors. That's, you know, it's one problem. It took forever. We've also won some legal battles. So if an embassy has part, or a consulate, has part of their building that they rent out for commercial purposes, we've argued that they should be taxed, because it's not that's not the purpose. The reason you're giving a tax break is...
Did you win those?
Second?
Did you win those?
We won in court, and some of them have started to pay up. Yeah, I mean, we're, you know, there's some countries that have tickets that are 5 years old. They have got 10 tickets the same day. You're never going to collect. Let's get serious here. When people say, let's go collect those $10 billion in tickets, you know, the courts wouldn't give you anything. It'd be worth more. It'd be cost you more to go after them than you get.
All right. Thanks a lot, John. Let's go to line three here. Monica, real fast. We're almost out of time. Real fast.
Yeah, we have limited time. I want to talk about the illegal street vendors in Soho Canal Street. I'm resigned to the fact that this happens openly on Canal Street, which is just crazy anyway. But it's seeping into the streets in Tribeca.
Monica, if you've got any, if we only got a couple seconds, if you've got any good ideas, I couldn't agree with you more. We take them down the station. We give them a ticket. The courts put them right out in the street. The state legislature will not even let us fingerprint them. So we can't say to the court, look, this person has done it five times in a row because we can't prove who the was the last time. It's insanity, but there's a First Amendment right, if they sell art and this sort of thing, and it's just the enforcement is impossible.
Mr. Mayor, our time is up. We will not be meeting next Friday. You're going to take off, or at least I'm going to take off.
I will. Thanksgiving Day, the balloons blow up around the Museum of Natural History on Wednesday night, and Thursday morning, one of the great parades of all times.
Happy Thanksgiving.
You too.
All right. We'll see you on
you
Monday.
Just heard it.